You're listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Daniele Fribarancini.
Hello, Richard.
Giro designer, course designer, head honcho for our Giro, which gets underway on Saturday, Daniel.
Not just a course designer, not just some faceless functionary. I'm also the race director. Jesus.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Someone's getting a bit big for their boots, aren't they, Lionel?
Yeah, someone's upset me today. Well, maybe we'll elaborate on that in a future episode.
Oh my goodness me. Wow.
Someone's jumped the gun as far as the Giro is concerned. Giro.
I don't know if we'll get him back, Lionel. What
someone
do you think?
Someone started the prologue on the Friday while all the other teams were still, you know, collecting their bags at the airport.
Well, we should be going to Hungary this week, as with many other people in the cycling world, for the start of the Giro d'Italia. We are not. However, we are beginning our daily coverage of our Giro on Saturday. And we've all been working pretty hard, haven't we? Obviously, Daniel's been working the hardest as race director. But you and I, Lionel, have been interviewing people and collecting lots of great material for the next 3 weeks.
And cooking as well. I've been busy as a bee in the kitchen making Italian themed meals. So, and interviewing people from the world of cycling as well. I mean, you know, let's
not with your mouth full, I hope.
No. It's going to be a 3 week journey through the history and culture of the Giro and Italy itself, isn't it, Daniel? That's the idea.
An acoustic love letter, I think we're calling it, aren't we?
Acoustic love letter. We'll be telling stories. There are many elements to this this 3 week bonanza, but the food you mentioned, Lionel, there will be a wine element, there'll be a riding element as well, but we'll also be telling stories, recent and old, about the Giro. And we've done, I mean, among the interviewees we've got Cadel Evans, Tom Dumoulin, Chris Froome, Andy Hampsten and his win in 1988. Jorgen Leth, the Danish filmmaker, interviewed him the other day. You two have been interviewing lots of people as well, haven't you? Do you want to mention a few names?
The more sort of left field names in my case, as is my want. Ivan Quaranta, remember him? Richie Port, of course. Luca Guercilena, my former coach, famously. A shadowy figure who was in the headlines a couple of years ago and became a very controversial figure, since disappeared a little bit from public view, but there's a connection between him and, well, the first three stages of our Giro and Hungary. What about you, Nathan?
What about me? Well, I really enjoyed having a simulated lunch with Max Sciandri last week, which will be one of the longer form interviews that will go out. Derby born, Tuscan raised, Max Sciandri. And we'll find out about his Anglo-Italian roots and, one step of separation from Max Sciandri to Robert De Niro. I wonder if people can work out how that comes about. But the Giro, our Giro, will also look in detail at Mario Cipollini, Gianni Bugno's 1990 Giro d'Italia win, when he led from start to finish, and of course Italy went football crazy that summer, didn't it? But Gianni Bugno won the Giro, and I think was the first rider since Eddie Merckx in 73 to wear the pink jersey from start to finish. And of course, that 73 Giro, as you say, Richard, was the subject of Jürgen Leth's film, The Stars and the Water Carriers, which I watched this morning, and will be ready to revise our Barry Norman impressions for a bit of a film review on that.
Excellent. Well, we'll cover a bit more of this in the course of this episode. We're going to hear from Matt White, the Mitchelton Scott sports director, as well. We'll hear a bit from Tom Dumoulin as well, and how he's recovered from his injury and how he's finding the current situation. Larry Warbass again with his dispatch from lockdown, and some news about Larry Warbass and Conor Dunn and their adventure from a couple of years ago, and a special treat for friends of the podcast. We'll have Francois Tomaso's song as well. But in a moment, we're going to hear from Marco Pinotti, head of performance at CCC and former rider. Marco was on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he lives in Bergamo, of course, which was one of the places very badly hit by the coronavirus crisis. Now, we're working with Stacey Snyder, the ceramicist, again this year. She has made some beautiful mugs and cappuccino cups. They will go on sale on Saturday. A first batch will go on sale on Saturday. And once again, they'll raise money for a good cause. And in this case, we decided to ask Marco to suggest a good cause. And he suggested a cycling school in Cheney, not far from Bergamo. And well, here's his rationale for that.
So I came up with the idea of helping this cycling school. It's really the real name, Scuola Ciclismo Cheney. First of all, because it's right in the middle of the area most affected by the coronavirus back since the beginning. It's in Valle Seriana. And then because I never raced for this or never been directly involved with them, but the majority of people I've talked to, they told me in the last year this club, okay, it's because it's a club, and then they raise kids from 6 to 18 or 20 years old. They give them the possibility to race. It's one of the club that give, you know, keep the some values in order. Like the first school is more important than you know, than bike racing, and then they try to give the highest amount of young riders the possibility to race regardless of their talent or their possibility.
And you mentioned that the you know, you're very supportive of the people running it. You feel that they are, you know, they're good people, and that they've obviously set up a very worthwhile initiative.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the people, the people who run the team are all volunteer, and it's run also by I know the what is the vice president, and his father was the president, so it's a lot of volunteer, and it's all. All done by donation of the small industries of the valley, which are suffering as well the problem of the lockdown, because this valley is very industrial. And on the other side is also one of the – this used to be a valley, Valle Seriana, where Savoldelli grew up, Guerini grew up, but the team they grew up to are all disappearing because of the – no, it turned out the area has been more and more industrial, and so it's more and more dangerous to go by bike, and there are not many clubs left, and this is one of the few left, and one that gives the possibility to young people to go by bike. It's a very nice valley. It's a very nice valley to ride the bike. Actually, here's some famous climber, Selvino, or you know, up to Passo Presolana, and.
And I think you got in touch with them, didn't you, with this suggestion or this proposal. What was their reaction?
I mean, they were initially, just to show you how humble these people are, they said, yeah, but we don't know how much money you can raise, but it's better maybe to give to people who really need, like doctors or nurses right now are under big pressure. That was, you know, the proposal was really at the beginning of March, so. We hear news. The only noise we could hear out of the road was the ambulances. So the president there, the first thing he mentioned me, you know, I mean, it's better if you give money to these people. So this show again, you know, the moral values of the people running the team.
Well, that was Marco Pinotti explaining that the mugs and cappuccino cups made by Stacey Snyder will benefit that cycling school. It sounds like a great cause, and we'll tell you a bit more about them over the course of the next few weeks. In terms of when the Stacey stuff will go on sale, it will be on Saturday. It'll be sold through her Etsy page. That's Etsy.com, etsy.com/shop/Snyder Ceramics. She'll also update her website with information about when they're on sale. That's stacysnyder.com, S-T-A-C-Y-S-N-Y-D-E-R der.com. We've already mentioned wine, and there'll be wine available to listen to the podcast as well if they want to buy some wine, and some of the proceeds from that will also go to the cycling school in Cheney. I think you've got a bit more information on that, Daniel.
Well, I think you've got more information on the wine than any of us, Rich, at this point. Almost a week out from the start of the race, I think you know, you've treated yourself to a bit of a sneak preview. the wine,
it's oxygenating nicely.
Yes, yes. Well, in addition to our Giro, so that's our fictional Giro route, fictional sort of redacted Giro route. It's there are some similarities with what would have been the 2020 Giro route. Parallel to that, we've also come up with a wine route, a Percorso dei Vini. And I've been working with Greg Anderson from Divine Cellars, which is an independent wine merchant in London, specialised in biodynamic wine, organic wine. And Greg and I have come up with a selection representing the Giro route, our Giro route. And those wines are going to be available to buy. Greg, I think, can deliver to pretty much anyone in the south of England, but might even be able to go further afield than that. And we've got a Selezione Our Giro, the cycling podcast, and we've also got a baby Giro section. So there's a 12 bottle option and a 6 bottle option, and we'll be tasting the wines and we'll be commenting on them in well, certainly in Richard's case, in his inimitable style.
I'll stand by for that
during the episodes. That's if Richard has any of the wine left by then.
You're listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk.
Our title sponsor is iWalker, and they will be supporting us on our virtual journey around Italy over the next 3 weeks. And, well, they're in a position to support lots of small businesses at the moment. They can lend between £1,000 and £200,000, and applications can take only a few minutes. And they promise a fast and fair decision once an application has been made. To find out more about iWalker, and particularly how they are confronting the challenges during this coronavirus crisis, obviously lots of small businesses are finding times very tough. Let's hear from iWalker's Chief Operating Officer.
Hi, I'm Seema, and I'm the Chief Operations Officer at iWalker. At iWalker, I am responsible for our UK operations team. So it's a team of around 60 people who talk to our customers every day and help to serve them. And I also am responsible for our people team. So our team that does our recruitment and HR and looks after our office when we have an office. We're all home working at the moment. So iWalker lends to small businesses in the UK and in Germany. The businesses that we lend to give you some idea, they're hairdressers, plumbers, car dealers. It's a real wide, diverse range of customers that we serve. The switch to home working was a relatively straightforward one for us. All of our systems are cloud-based. All of our teams have laptops. So we were able to make that switch relatively pain-free. But yeah, there's been a huge impact on our customers and in turn, a huge impact on our business and also on our lenders. So yeah, we're all in this together. There have been some really big shifts that we've had to make, but look, our mission has always been to be there to help our small businesses to thrive. And yeah, in terms of how it's changed, about kind of 4 weeks ago, we were focused very much on helping to issue new funding to customers, and more recently there's been a much bigger focus on helping our existing customers who have loans and to be able to repay those loans in a way that's affordable for them when their circumstances have changed significantly as a result of the crisis. One of the things we're doing at the moment is applying for accreditation from the British Business Bank so that we can help to distribute some of the government funding that is being provided by the government that Rishi Sunak announced a few weeks ago. And we know the banks have been struggling a little bit to get that money out fast enough. But getting money quickly to small businesses that really need it is really like the bread and butter for iWalker. That's the reason we exist. So our application is in, and we're hoping to be accredited soon, and we're already in the process of building a product so that we'll be able to do that as soon as the government say we can. So there's a lot going on at iWalker now. We're still super busy, but yeah, certainly had to change a lot on some of the things that we've been working on to adapt in the current situation that we find ourselves in.
If iWalker sounds like the perfect fit for your small business, go to iwalker.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk.
Well, we'll tell you a little bit more about our Giro later on in the episode, including the route. But this morning, I spoke to Matt White, the Mitchelton Scott sports director, somebody who for me is synonymous with the Giro d'Italia. And you'll hear from him again throughout our Giro coverage, as you would if the Giro was actually on, no doubt, on various topics. But I also asked him about how things are at the moment with his team, Mitchelton Scott, and the possibility of a revised calendar later in the year with the Tour de France coming at the end of August, followed by the Giro and the Vuelta. Asked him about that and a little bit about how some of his riders are managing in this situation at the moment. Part of the magic of the Giro is maybe that it's the first Grand Tour of the year. If this revised calendar comes off, what would it be like going to the Giro in October after the Tour de France?
Look, if the proposed calendar comes off, it'll be very interesting, because with that window, what my prediction is, with the window between the Tour, and I don't see many riders saying, especially this year, or saying, I won't ride the Tour de France because I'll wait for the Giro.
No.
So, whereas, you know, people don't ride the Tour de France to ride the Giro on the World Tour. And I think the combination, if those two Grand Tours do overlap, the Giro and the Vuelta, I think the only combination you'll see guys doing is maybe the Tour and the Vuelta. Mm. And I think you'll see a different type of rider maybe at the Giro. And also, it'll depend on what they do with the first three stages. Highly likely won't be starting in Hungary. So are they going to be three sprint stages? It's going to be interesting. I think, yeah, you'll have a different guy winning the Giro than probably would have won if it had been in its normal calendar slot.
How do you pick teams for these races as well? I mean, given the lack of racing and that factor of the Giro, not being a building block to anything else, just an end in itself. I mean, how do you go about selecting teams for these races?
Look, I would think that most teams would be in the same situation, that they will stack their tour teams. So, and look, most teams do already take their best team to the tour. But, yeah, sometimes you can't, especially you've got younger guys or whatever, sometimes you can't take a lot of guys from the Giro to the tour. So not the best field doesn't always go to the Tour de France, because, yeah, look at some of the leaders. They'll go to the Giro and they won't ride the tour. Whereas this year, I think every team will have their GC guy at the tour. And I think it'll be more the younger riders and maybe the up-and-coming GC guys you'll see battling out for the Giro win. Look, on a team like Ineos, where they've got, you know, a lot of leaders, maybe you still might see a Carapaz leading the team there. Mm. Maybe, because they have so much depth. Where does Carapaz fit into the Ineos Tour de France team?
Mm.
So but most teams haven't got the luxury of having six Grand Tour winners in their roster. So, look, I would think, like, you know, Jumbo Visma, they will send all three leaders to the Giro. Ineos will send, you know, their best possible team to the tour. But, you know, like I said before, maybe there's too much talent there that they have to send one or two guys to the Giro. So that's same with us. Yeah, Simon Yates was originally doing the Giro. Highly likely he won't be now. He'll probably be focusing on the tour. So. But yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, so the Giro could almost be like the Vuelta in normal years.
Yeah, and also be interesting too is, you know, when you look at the sprinters, you know, like normally a Caleb Ewan, a Viviani, a Gaviria, they do 2 weeks of the Giro and then go to the Tour. Now, all of those guys, I would think, will be at the Tour. Now, they're not going to pull out of the Tour de France to go to the Giro. So you could see a quite weak or a very different sprint field at the Giro as well. You might not see your top flight guys at the Giro in the sprint in the sprinters because there's just no time to recover. So it'd be real interesting. Or they might go because, you know, 2 weeks is okay recovery, but it's okay recovery if you're only riding 10 days. So, yeah, there's a lot of ifs and whatevers, and we'll see as we get closer to the date, especially when we see there's been a leaked calendar, but that's only the World Tour races. There's a lot of small races that have got to be laid in there as well.
Yeah. How optimistic are you that we'll see any racing this year? I mean, you were saying your kids aren't due back at school till September.
No. I'm going to leave the how they're going to get it done up to the experts and the governments, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who are going to decide if we race, not the UCI. I don't understand how they're going to move 3,000 people around hotels daily in a safe way. I don't know. A lot's gonna depend on how small this virus is a month out or 6 weeks out. You know, things are moving pretty good at the moment, especially in Spain and Italy. I think they're down in the hundreds. It might sound a lot, but they're in the hundreds of deaths a day at the moment. So it's really scaling down, and the contamination levels are really going really well. So I think in the next 3 to 4 weeks, the virus is going to be very minimal here. But the big problem is governments. I think governments aren't going to be so open to opening borders, especially people from overseas. But, America is still going to be the epicenter of this virus for a while to come. I can't see too many, at the way we stand at the moment, a lot of governments aren't going to allow just freedom of movement once this does clear up.
You're trying to put as much structure in place, are you, for the riders to, for their heads as much as their bodies maybe at the moment?
Yeah, just to stay connected. Now we've got some young guys in there who've been locked in their apartment for 7 weeks. So imagine being a 23-year-old like Callum Scottson who's in an apartment on his own for 7 weeks in Girona. And you're allowed to leave to go shopping. Like he probably hasn't had a decent conversation with someone face to face for 2 months. So it's probably been quite lonely. So, Monday morning we've been doing the team ride, and that's been on Zoom. So people have been having a chat and mucking around. They do one lap easy, and then they muck around on the second lap. And that's staff have been jumping on there as well. So that's the men's team, the women's team, and the staff. That's been every Monday. Then the Ruby Racing was on last week. We had the Swift stuff on this week, and then they've been having two Saturday, Sunday. There's been structured rides for the team. And then a midweek one. So there's been something to keep everyone entertained. And I think the guys in Girona will probably be scaling down a bit now because those guys have been allowed out in the road as of today.
Right. Yeah.
The guys in Andorra, the Andorran government have made this. It's only, at the moment it's for a week. So those guys they're allowed to go on one road in Andorra. So they've got to drive their car to the starting point. They can't ride there. It's out and back. It's got two climbs and a valley road.
Right.
But they've got to go between 8 o'clock and 11 and 10 o'clock, and they've got to have a follow car with a medical kit in it. It's like there's this list of rules. Yeah, yeah. So most of our guys are just going to go. They can't. Well, they haven't got one. There isn't a team car up there. So I'd actually know if they could. They can use a normal car, but if they've got a girlfriend or partner who wants to follow them for 2 hours on the road out and back. But the Andorran government, because there's only 40. Oh yeah, because there's only 48 pros live in Andorra. So of the 48 pros, they've split them up into two groups, and so one group can train Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The other group Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Wow.
So most of those guys are just going to blow it off for this week. Whereas the guys who are living in Spain and they're and Italy, they're into it. They can go for they're on the road now.
So that was Matt White, the sports director, head sports director at Mitchelton Scott, talking about the proposed revised calendar, and obviously adding the point that whether these races happen is very much in question and will ultimately be decided by the authorities rather than the UCI or ASO or RCS. But they've got to work on the basis that they will happen at the moment and plan for those races. And that raises lots of very interesting questions and challenges, I suppose, not least the fact that the Giro will come after the Tour de France. And I thought what he said was really interesting about how that would affect the field. And, you know, someone like Simon Yates, who was going to go to the Giro and try to win it this year, would not now do that in this new scenario. And then also, you know, he was talking about the challenges that some of his riders have living alone in some cases, and the riders in Andorra. He also mentioned, I mean, a couple of things about, you know, some of his riders are living at altitude. Simon Yates and Lucas Hamilton are at 2,000 metres. Esteban Chavez is at 2,700 metres. And he says it gives them up to a 12% disadvantage in the e-racing. He also said that he'd been keeping an eye on what some other riders and other teams are doing, and that he's noticed quite a few riders basically just doing what they do on the road on their indoor trainers, 25-hour weeks. And he said that none of his riders are doing that. They seem to be very much kind of maintaining their fitness rather than training really hard, because the goal is so uncertain at the moment. The target that they're aiming for, nobody really knows where it is for sure. So, some interesting comments, as always, there from Matt White, I thought.
Yeah, Rich, the calendar discussion and the calendar question could be quite a fascinating one. Obviously, nothing's been confirmed yet, but the people I've spoken to, and I'm sure you guys have spoken to, and certainly several of the reports that have come out in Spain and Italy are pretty unanimous that the Giro is going to take place between the 3rd and the 25th of October, and the Vuelta will be cut to 18 days. I think it's 18. And it will be between 20th of October and the 8th of November. So that's a week earlier than we thought it might be. There was talk a couple of weeks ago about the Vuelta finishing in late or mid to late November. But I suppose what it does, and what Matt hinted at there in the interview, was it takes the option of the Vuelta as a sort of a kind of last chance saloon. I always used to compare it to that awful nightclub that when you would go out, particularly I went to university in London, and there was a place called Ombres just off Oxford Street, and at the start of the night everyone would be absolutely adamant that they would not end the night in Ombres, and you know, you would try to catch the, you'd be out there, you know, drinking and trying to catch the eye of some lucky lady earlier in the evening, and start to get quite despondent and start to get quite drunk, and then by the end of the night everyone was piling into Ombres. And the Vuelta is a bit like that, isn't it? No one says at the start of the year I'm targeting the Vuelta, or not many people do, but you know, a lot of people end up there.
Does that mean then that if the Giro and the Vuelta are overlapping, you know, there'll be some people in Ombres, and there'll be the people with some taste will be next door somewhere much nicer.
Igloo and Alpe d'Huez.
Exactly. But we know now that if anyone really wants to do the Vuelta, the Tour Vuelta double, it's probably going to have to be sort of premeditated, and it's impossible that someone can do the Giro and the Vuelta. And you know, there's the other question of prestige. I know that at Mitchelton, you know, when there was discussion a few weeks ago about an 18-day Giro, conversations were had, and I'm sure it wasn't just that team, but about, you know, did that diminish the Giro? If take Simon Yates for example, Simon Yates a couple of years ago looked certain to win a Giro d'Italia, or he looked very likely to win a Giro d'Italia, and he blew up on, what was it, the 19th day? So if you imagine Simon Yates winning an 18-day Grand Tour now in this very much sort of compromised season, would he then face the allegation, the argument that, oh, well, you know, he can do it over 18 days, but not 19 or not 21? So, you know, the Vuelta is going to have to face up to that, isn't it? And it's going to, yeah, that might impact some riders' decisions.
Yeah. We're used to seeing asterisks beside riders' names for Grand Tour wins, but this would be a slightly different one, I guess.
I think the thing we have to bear in mind really is that the calendar as written is like the most ambitious child's Christmas list, it seems to me. You know, put everything on there. You know, I want a Scalextric set and a computer and a bike. And really, it may well be that we don't get everything that we would like. The fact of the matter is that we just don't know whether the calendar will be able to resume on the 1st of August, as everyone hopes it will. And we don't know whether professional cycling has really dug down into the detail of what is and isn't feasible logistically. And I think that it will come down to what the teams feel that they can what they can cope with. And the people that win the races will be the people who are able to adjust to potentially plans changing, you know, right up to maybe what, 2, 3, 4 weeks out from something actually happening. I mean, it's impossible to plan on the basis of a 100% certainty that any of these dates are going to hold. So it could be somebody could be targeting an event, the Tour de France, starting at the end of August, and then finding that gets shifted back a month. Really, it's going to be a case of everybody just coming to the start line hoping for the best. And really, I think it will be more refreshing just to see some racing and worrying about the kind of the whys and wherefores of who's doing what event and whether they're in the best form. That's a secondary discussion once we actually see some competition going on. And I think that, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. But I would say, listening to Matt White talking about riders doing 25-hour weeks on the trainer, the possibility of being mentally burned out, let alone physically burned out, by the time some actual racing resumes is, I would have thought, would be higher if somebody's hammering themselves away indoors.
That's kind of what he was suggesting, and also why, you know, their team are really dialing it back in terms of the training, and certainly in terms of hours. One rider who is hoping to race this year, as they all are, but knows what it's like to not race, is Tom Dumoulin, who we have interviewed for our Giro coverage. Let's hear a little bit from him now, because he obviously had most of last year out with injury. And I was just keen to find out how, you know, he is in terms of his fitness and form, and how he feels to be sidelined once again. How are things now? You've obviously you had your injury problems last year. Does it? Nobody's racing at the moment, but does it play on your mind that it's been a while since you did race? Is that something that you worry about at all?
Not necessarily worry about, but I doubt a little bit. How is it going to be when I come back into the peloton? Do I still know how it works, and do I still know how to fight for position and stuff like that? About my physical condition, I'm not too worried. I mean, I know what I can do, and I know what I can do in training, and that's the same as any other year. So, I'm quite confident about that, but it will definitely be strange to just be in the cycling world again. Mm. I've been out of it for so long. Anyway, nobody will have races for at least half a year. So actually we will all be in the same position in September end of August. So,
Is it easy to keep motivated when there's so much uncertainty? Do you find that difficult or not?
No, not really. No.
Training.
I had it last year already, and I had a lot of time last year to reflect on what I wanted, what my ambitions still were, what I love about the sport and what I don't like about the sport, and about my job actually. And I had so many answers I take that into this year. I know what I want, and I know where I want to be when this whole Corona crisis is over. And that is what gets me up every morning, and I'm still very motivated.
What's harder? Is it being out long-term with an injury or being sidelined like everybody else as we are at the moment? What's tougher?
The injury.
When everybody else is still racing.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's in the same boat now, which is not nice. I mean, it's not a nice boat to be in altogether, but at least we're in this together. And last year I felt like, I was the only, and it was actually true, I was the only one sitting in that injury boat. And that was definitely harder to accept at times.
Great. Well, I hope we see you racing and everybody else racing again soon.
Yeah, I hope so.
Fingers crossed. How confident are you it will be this year?
I have really no idea. I just really hope we can race at the end of the year in some way. Maybe without people on the side of the road, or maybe, we just need to do our best to find a way to still race as long as it's not affecting global health. If we can find a way to not affect or to not,
put other people in danger.
Exactly. Then we should just race in some way. And I hope that's going to be possible. But at the moment, nobody knows.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. Very grateful to them as ever. And if you want to get 25% off any Science and Sport products, go to scienceandsport.com and use the code SISCP25. I've been munching away on their Go Energy Bakes, and I even had a sneaky little performance nitrate gel on our group ride on Sunday morning. Lionel.
Did you indeed? Is that why
you might have noticed. You might have noticed a little spurt that followed that.
You were romping up Box Hill, weren't you? Virtual Box
Hill. I was. I actually was virtually romping up Virtual Box Hill and doing so in the vicinity of Stephen Moon, the chief executive at Science and Sport, who joined us again on the ride. And I did spend a bit of time trying to drop him, trying to ride past him quite fast. But he kept coming back. So he must have been taking even more of the performance nitrates than me, I guess.
He had two to your one.
But the energy bakes are great. They are little cakes, that are a nice substitute for energy bars.
Do you wait?
Strawberry and lemon.
Do you wait until you're actually supposed to have those, you personally, before you crack them open, or do you...
Oh, God, we're still on the wine here.
Do you wolf those down?
He's not going to let this go, is he? I mean, I think technically I did probably open these before I was supposed to, the energy bakes.
That doesn't shock me.
But, they were sitting there, so tempting, a bit like the wine. Anyway, we heard from Tom Dumoulin there. We'll hear more from him in our Giro coverage. But, Daniel, there was a point you wanted to make about turbo training.
Well, just you mentioned that there are some riders who have been doing very intensive training sessions on turbo trainers and a lot of hours on turbo trainer, and I was listening to an Italian podcast the other day, and Mario Cipollini was one of the guests, and he mentioned, and in fact went into quite a lot of detail about how he thought that a lot of riders who are doing long hours on the turbo trainer will derive quite a big advantage from this, at least in the short term, because of the nature of the pedal stroke on turbo trainer. The lack of sort of dead spot. I think everyone who's ridden a turbo trainer will know what I'm talking about, particularly, when you're doing simulated climbs on a turbo trainer, and that the sort of the way the resistance is distributed across over the whole pedal stroke. And he thought that a lot of people would come out of this period, if that's all they've been doing, going very, very well, particularly on climbs. Obviously, we expect the restrictions to have been relaxed in most, if not all, countries for a reasonable period of time before the actual racing on the road starts again. So maybe whatever advantage people are deriving will no longer apply then. But, it's an interesting point.
Do we not think, would endurance not suffer as a, condition is a, you know, it's a seesaw, isn't it? You get one bit of it right, and then the other bit starts to suffer. And then if you work on the endurance, then the top end starts to suffer. I mean, is that not the case?
Not if you're doing 7-hour rides.
I guess. So with a 7-hour turbo training ride, they're going to be able to do 12-hour road stages. Brilliant. It'd be like the early Giros.
The thing is, you're pedaling the whole time, which you're not on the road. And that in itself means that, you know, an hour, 2-hour ride is probably worth more time. It's equivalent to a longer ride on the road in pure, you know, effort. I mean, Matt White talked about this as well, because he as well said that the thing about Turbo Trainer is, you and especially on some of these platforms, you always go hard. You know, you don't go on the Turbo Trainer and go easy. Whereas all his cycling the last few years has been pootling around at 120, 150 watts. And he said that his normal exercise is running, and he hadn't been running for a while. And he noticed when he went out running, having spent the last few weeks on the Turbo Trainer, that he was really fit. So I think it does get you fitter. Ashley Moulman-Passio, the CCC rider, has spent 6 or 7 weeks, obviously, on her Turbo Trainer, and went out at the weekend and rode her local climb, Rocca Corba. I'm trying to figure out whether she actually broke her best time or went very, very close. But the long and short of it was that her form was certainly very, very good, having spent all that time on the Turbo Trainer. Little addendum to that, I just messaged Ashley Moulman-Passio, and she did beat her previous time at Rocca Corba. Her previous time as Queen of the Mountains was 34:40. After 6 weeks or so on the Turbo Trainer, she did 31:09. So she absolutely hammered her previous time.
One thing I think we can be fairly sure of, Rich, is that the physiologists and coaches watching, working for World Tour teams and other pro teams and watching their riders over this period in their training on turbo trainers, will be able to harvest an awful lot of interesting information, and information which might well inform the way they train riders going forward. We might see some fairly significant and interesting changes to the sort of received wisdom about training and how World Tour riders should be training going forward.
Just before we leave the subject of turbo trainers, we should mention our latest friend special, shouldn't we? Which is a real treat for anybody, because it's an interview with Daniel Freeb. Introducing Daniel Freeb, and my goodness, this prompted or inspired a flurry of sign-ups when people heard about this one. Really did. We had a very busy weekend. People are obviously keen to understand the enigma that is Daniel Freeb. I know you listened to it at the weekend, Lionel.
I did.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Listened to it
all the way through.
That's
it. Hot take?
No comment.
Hot take was, I was surprised. Well, you mentioned your VO2 max. I won't spoil it for people who, but I've only ever been cycling with you once, Daniel, and there wasn't a great deal of evidence that you were quite as talented on that particular day.
Yeah, I didn't think you got VO2 max.
Well, I bonked, didn't I, Lionel, with you?
You did. You had to stop at a shop and buy chocolate bars to get the last 10 miles back to Watford Station.
One thing we didn't actually discuss in the podcast, I wasn't in the friend special, I wasn't actually a big believer in eating or drinking on the bike. I never used to drink. I was a bit like Pantani. Pantani, I can't remember which one of his teammates, I think it might have been Fabio Fontanelli, used to call him the camel. He never really drunk much when he was.
Well, we can get onto
unlike,
that. In
unlike
part
you,
two.
Richard, something you'll never when, be accused of not we, drinking when we, very much.
When we do that, and when we do part two, we can cover that. But lots of fascinating stuff in there. I'm sure people will enjoy it. That was me interviewing Daniel, first in a series of us being interviewed by others. And Lionel, you've still to be interrogated as well.
Yeah, putting that off.
Really. You want to do that in person, don't you, really?
If you say so.
Listen, Daniel,
who's the Frost to Napalm's Nixon in that episode? Is that going to be me?
Well, you can do it if you want, Daniel. Yeah, that would be great. Excellent. Good luck. Going back to our Giro, which you've been busy on, Daniel. The route is being revealed this week. Can you tell us, I mean, how did you set about that? We obviously had a route for the Giro this year starting in Budapest. How much have you taken of the original route and how much have you added little flourishes of your own?
I wanted to retain the spirit and most of the template of the original route. This was obviously a very fun exercise. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago. I think we discussed, didn't we, the kind of thing that you would do at the back of the classroom when you were 14 or 15. You should have been concentrating on Latin. I mean, for me, it was sort of designing golf courses on a little notepad or football jerseys. I think Napalm, you designed, in fact, cycling routes, did you?
Yeah, I used to design my own Tour de France routes the Tour de King's Langley, which only one edition ever held, featured the infamous sex shop time trial. So, yeah, I think these were quite... I should point out, I didn't call it that. That was the name given it by Simon, the photographer, who was the only other rider in the event. Only two riders started the Tour de King's Langley.
And one finished.
And no, well, we both finished. We both finished.
So anyway, Rich, getting back to our route, much like Napalm, I was very ably assisted. I had a bit of a wingman, and that was Ben Lowe of VeloViewer. Now, VeloViewer... if you're not familiar with Ben and VeloViewer, they are the mapping service that have really been working very, very closely with World Tour teams. The majority of World Tour teams now, I think, use VeloViewer over the last few years. And using VeloViewer is really like pulling the curtain back on how World Tour teams plan races, how they recce routes, the kind of information they look to harvest from their route recces and their kind of, you know, preparation they do on things like Google Earth. So, you know, Ben's someone we've known for a few years now. When we thought we were we might set about designing our own Giro route or simulated Giro route, Ben was an obvious person to help us. And I think we can hear from him now, Rich. He's going to tell us a little bit about VeloViewer and a little bit about the process of working with a heavyweight of Grand Tour route design like yours truly.
So VeloViewer is basically just a website which is used by both the professional teams and by many, many recreational cyclists. And it helps them to get the most out of their riding by enabling them to look at their Strava data in lots of interesting ways. So I started it back in about 2012 and I was just working as a developer, and I built VeloViewer because I just wanted to see the list of all the Strava segments I'd done. So I had no idea how many top 10s or top 50s I had. So it was purely around building that list and just seeing what I could do with the Strava data. And then other people started using the site, discovered it, and I just kept on adding more and more features, things like data visualizations and charts and graphs that just to display all your Strava data in lots of different ways. And then doing the 3D profiles was really interesting, and those are like key to what the teams use, and currently they're being used by Eurosport and GCN for the Zwift races that's going on at the moment. It's really good that it motivates people to get out and ride more. That's kind of one of the key things, and I really wanted to motivate people based on non-performance based targets, so not to do with speed or power, so things like Eddington numbers and it's basically how many times you've ridden a certain distance. So if you've ridden 100 miles 100 times, but you've not ridden 101 miles 101 times, then your Eddington number is 100. So you've got that 100 miles. But then I've got various different ones. So like based on climbing and based on kilometers for people, it would be easier to get a high Eddington number in kilometers than it is in miles. That's basically what Eddington numbers are for the maths geeks. So it looks like yours has got just over, it's got 50,008 meters of climbing. So I correct the elevation data for the team. So you've got the access, same access as the team. So you have corrected elevation data in here. So yeah, just over 50,000 meters of climbing. So the Tour de France the originally planned Tour de France of 2020 is 55,000 meters of climbing. So it's, you know, it's a touch soft on the overall climbing. Distance as well is 3,500 kilometers, so that's pretty standard really, but you definitely have some pretty hard stages in there, and yeah, some horrible looking finishes. So for every single stage, we've got the route details page for it. So the way I process all the race routes for the whole season, but including our Giro, is that they get mapped out as Strava routes, and the teams get to plan for races like the Tour de France as well, using that same page, which you the normal users will be able to access as well. They just get a few extra features in there which aren't really relevant to us normal folk. So yeah, basically you can go in there and look at the 3D profiles, look at the workout where all the climbs are going to be. We're lucky in terms of the Giro that we don't have to ride the whole stage, so it'll just be certain sections. So we'll also have the segments available for those as well, so we'll be able to see exactly what it is you're doing each day. It is a challenge. Yeah, there's lots of red. So people who know my profiles, if it's red, that means it's very steep, and there are certainly a few stages on there which have got some horrible looking red bits. It's fortunately not until stage 9, so, and that's just before the rest day, so at least you get a little bit of chance to recover after that. So basically I've managed to keep it going just on my own, so doing all the coding and all the admin stuff and making all the coffees, everything like that. But I am hoping to recruit my first developer at some point over the summer if everything goes well. It's been a great journey, and I've had over 400,000 Strava users now connect their accounts to Velovue, so it's just crazy how it's grown.
So Charles, that was Ben, and it's been great fun working with him over the last few weeks on this. I must stress that if you are a bit of a nerd and you're a cyclist or even a runner or even a kayaker or canoer, you can, as Ben said there, sign up.
Canoeist.
Canoe pilot, I don't know.
Cycler.
A cycler, yeah. You can sign up, as Ben said there, to VeloViewer Pro, and it gives you a vast amount of absolutely fascinating detail. You can lose yourself in that for many hours, days, weeks, and months. Every possible metric and piece of information you could possibly imagine about your own route planning, your own performance, you will find there. And at £10 a year, it is really extraordinary value. So we'll be talking a lot more about the route over the course of the 3 weeks. There are mythical, legendary climbs, and I've sent the route over. There are also rich nods to the current situation in Italy. There are sort of homages to places we've talked about a lot over the last few weeks, like Bergamo, which has been very badly hit by the coronavirus crisis. There are locations that relate very much to our history, our story, the cycling podcast over the last few years in the Giro. We're going to revisit some places where we've had fun and games over the last few years.
And we can ride sections of our Giro as well, can't we? We're going to be saddling up, or at least Richard and I are. You're not going to be riding, are you, Daniel? You're going to be head out of the sunroof in the race director's car, shouting at the crowds to get back. And
I'd like to see a graphic of that on the on the ride that we'll be doing, because we're using the RGT platform, which is free to sign up to, and there'll be segments from each of our stages available for people to ride, starting with the prologue in Budapest on Saturday. Is that right, Daniel?
The wheel, Richard, and the stages. Each stage will be available for 3 days, so you can ride it at your leisure when it suits for 3 days. And it starts with a prologue on Saturday. The prologue is actually identical to what would have been the Giro prologue in Budapest. And over the 21 stages, well, there are 21 segments. So really, it's the first Grand Tour of the season. It's the only Grand Tour really in cycling, taking place in cycling at the moment. And our listeners can finish that Grand Tour. The stages are about, or the segments are between 25 and 40 kilometers a day. Some huge climbs in there. You'll be going over climbs like the Fedaya, the Agnello, and we'd really like to see at least some listeners complete the route, complete the segments. I don't expect someone to ride 3,500 kilometers with I don't know how many.
That's not
50,000 meters of altitude
going to be possible. But we'd love to hear from people riding, and we will we're going to get to grips with this as we go on, and there will perhaps be opportunities to organise group rides and have races and so on as we go on. So we'll share our experiences of riding it with you in the daily episodes.
Yeah, and if you haven't signed up to RGT Cycling's platform, we'll put all the details of how you can sign up to the platform on our website, thecyclingpodcast.com/ourGiro. And well, basically you download the apps for your computer and your phone and away you go. And yeah, well, I'll be riding. I'm not sure. I'm going to set out to try and complete the Giro, but you know, I'll probably fall a few days behind and then give up before the mountains. So you know, I'm not setting the bar too high, but I'm going to try. I promise to try to complete the Giro.
I mean, one of the best things about it, Napalm, is you don't have to be leading general classification or general scoreboard, as we sometimes refer to it now, to wear the pink jersey. There is a cycling pod we have designed with RGT, a cycling podcast, RGiro pink jersey, haven't we? And you can wear that on the rides.
On the digital platform. Yeah, should just reassure people who perhaps aren't as enamoured with e-cycling or virtual cycling. We're not going to be reporting on these stages. That isn't what our Giro is about. Our Giro, the podcast itself, is really our regular Giro coverage, a kind of an amalgamation of the daily stage episodes and Kilometre Zero all put together. The only thing missing is the actual live racing. We're going to be delving into the history and culture of the race and of Italy itself. So we're not going to be talking about how Richard got dropped on Stelvio in our Giro, our virtual Giro. Well, not too much anyway. I mean, you know, if I do manage to drop Richard, you won't hear the end of it, of course. Not even listening.
I'm listening.
I think, well, whoever sets the best time in the opening time trial in Budapest.
I'm looking forward to that.
I mean, yeah, I need to Google how to cheat at indoor cycling.
Hey guys, it's Monday, May 4th. You're listening to Lockdown with Larry. Yeah, so can't say a whole lot exciting happened this week. I guess I finished up a rest week last week and then got back to training again this week. So right now it's just kind of like, you know, going through the motions. Pretty happy to see that a lot of my colleagues and friends in Europe are able to get back out on the roads again, either this week or next week for the guys in France. So I'm really happy for them because that's a long time inside and, you know, definitely tough on the head. So I think that will, you know, do them well. But I do have an exciting announcement to make, and that's that I guess most of you are probably familiar with the No-Go Tour that Connor Dunn and I did a couple years ago. And, you know, I think there was a second podcast episode on it as well with Connor's audio diary. Well, actually, the whole week we had filmed a lot of stuff along the way. Connor had a GoPro and, we kind of filmed our adventure and, you know, had considered putting together a video at the end. And Connor actually did, but, you know, we thought like, oh, maybe it would be cool to do something more with it than just, you know, a little video that we put together ourselves. So at the same time, the Cycling Podcast actually was considering getting into other forms of media aside from just audio and podcast. So it was a perfect match. And they asked us if we would be interested in being the first video that they did, or movie. So, yeah, they sent a great team out, La Pedale CC, I believe is the name. So Phil Sheehan and Rose Manley, and they came out, did some interviews with us in Nice and, you know, filmed us riding and riding together a bit. and yeah, put together a pretty sweet movie, which I believe this coming week will be open to friends of the podcast and potentially in the future to others for a small price. So yeah, I think I've already seen some preliminary parts of it and I'm pretty excited about it. So, you know, I think it's kind of a fitting experience or movie to watch at this time because it's all about sort of rediscovering, you know, your freedom and everything like that. And so with the imminent deconfinement in many countries, I think a lot of people will really get to enjoy that, you know, that time outside and that freedom on their bikes once again. So I hope you guys will, yeah, get to see it and enjoy. So I'm pretty excited about it. And yeah, I hope you guys really like it. So that will be coming soon. Beyond that, yeah, just that's pretty much the most exciting thing that's going to happen in a long time for me. So just been eating well. My mom's been cooking a lot, delicious food, sometimes too good. So yeah, I started the diet again to get back in shape this week. So training's been going really well, but I have been indulging slightly more than usual. So this last week, it's been back on the straight and narrow in terms of food. So that'll probably be a few week process, but not too bad when you're training hard. So we'll be watching the cookies and stuff like that. Not too many peanut M&Ms anymore. And yeah, just enjoying in a less liberal fashion. So cool. Well, hope you guys are holding up well. And for those who are still stuck inside, I hope you have a great time out on the road this next week. So you deserve to get back out there. Talk to you all soon.
Well, that was Larry Warbass there with his weekly dispatch from lockdown. And, well, he mentioned the film there that we have been working on for quite some time, And So We Rode, which is a documentary, 40 minutes long, about Larry and Connor Dunn's no-go tour, which they called it, when their team Aqua Blue went bust during the 2018 season, just before the Tour of Britain. And their response to that was just take off on their own adventure. And, well, they returned with quite a lot of footage, which has never been seen before. And we've made it into a documentary with some interviews with the two of them as well. And that's going to be released exclusively for the moment for Friends of the Podcast. The first time we've ever offered Friends of the Podcast a video. And Friends of the Podcast will be able to watch it for a month from May the 11th, which is next Monday, and that will coincide with day 3 of our Giro. If you sign up as a friend for the next month after that, you'll be able to watch it. If you're already a friend of the podcast, you'll be able to watch it. You'll get instructions about how to watch it. But yes, a little treat for Friends of the Podcast.
We'll be virtually flying from Hungary to Sicily that day, so we can virtually watch it on the virtual plane.
We can. Well, let's just remind listeners how this actually came about, because if you recall, the Aqua Blue team were supposed to be riding the Tour of Britain, weren't they? And we'd asked Connor Dunn to keep an audio diary from the Tour of Britain. And of course, the team went pop before the race. And so when Connor and Larry set off on their bikepacking adventure, we asked them to keep an audio diary anyway, which was released for Friends of the Podcast. And once our Giro is over, we will put that episode on our regular feed. So it will be a bit of a companion piece to the film. So, well, everyone will get a chance to listen to the original audio story of their journey. And, well, the film will be out, as you say, Richard, on Monday for Friends of the Podcast.
And they'll be able to watch it for a month. And anybody who signs up over the next month will also be able to watch it. So if you fancy 40 minutes of escapism in the Alps and, you know, following the two of them on their adventure, it's well, at the moment in particular, you watch it with a certain amount of nostalgia and, you know, looking forward to being able to explore roads like that again in the not too distant future. Well, listen, we've got lots to look forward to with our Giro starting in Budapest on Saturday. And, I mean, stay tuned. It'll be nightly episodes for the 21 days of our Giro. No rest days for us.
No, I'd better get cracking on a goulash.
We're going to play out with Francois Thomazeau's song, Looking Ahead to Our Giro. But before we do, a few thanks to friends of the podcast. Thank you very much indeed to Phil Chiquano, Mark Wilder, David Tomlinson, Przemek Kowalkowski, Lars Thomas Holter, Mark Florence, Brad Duff, Lucy Holden, Greg Lowe, Hector Heathcote, and James Bishop.
And a big thank you to Paul Barber, Anthony Ornott, Ewan Lawson, Kieran Finnegan, Toby Hopkins, John Ellis, William Nicol, Kevin Mitz, George Sendell, and Keith Robertson.
And a big thank you as well to Jacob Matthews, John Locke, Christopher Murray, David Gilchrist, Richard Watt, Peter Fry, Bryn Wilding, Keith Engelker, Kevin Baxter.
Well, guys, this is Francois Thomazeau, and I'm locked down. Well, probably not for long. It's a week before we get locked out in France, normally. Anyway, I wanted to... I know all of you probably have been locked down in your house, in your flat, for the best part of the last month or so. And, well, lots of you have been practicing training in your room. And, well, I wanted to pay homage to the place where we've spent most of our days recently. And here is a song by the Beach Boys. There's a world where I can go and tell my secrets to in my room. In my room, in my room. In this world I love. Got all my worries and my fears in my room, in my room, in my room. I do my dreaming and my screaming. I awake and pray. I do my crying and my training. Laugh at yesterday. It's dark and I